he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday, February 20th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill today. Looks like market-wise, it was got a little green on the screen finally. We've got Dow up 75 points. That's 0.15% to just under 49,500. And we've got the S&P 500 at 68.74. That's up 12 points. That's 18 basis points up for the day. NASDAQ, thankfully, leading the way, up 61 here early on in the session, up 0.27%. Crude oil, which we'll get to here in a few, of course, with the Iran situation there, actually down 12 cents today to $66.28, still significantly elevated from where it was, you know, just a week or two ago. I think it's up about 5% on the week. And we've got gold up a percent as well, still over that 5,000 mark at the moment at 5,051. And Bitcoin somewhat in the green today, up 0.21% at just over 67,000 a coin there. So, good morning and welcome to the Friday, February 20th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, taking the wheel for Bill today as he makes his way out to sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. I hope it's sunny. I would imagine it usually is. He'll be actually going to be meeting with a group of individual investors out in Scottsdale that he's kind of they've had him a number of years over the years. Big group over there of individual investors. A lot of do-it-yourself investors there. And Bill's making the trip, catch some spring training, I would imagine, this weekend, and then meeting with those folks on Monday. And we'll actually be in Houston next week as well. We'll be there Wednesday the 25th and Thursday the 26th. We'll be meeting with folks during the day, and of course Bill will be hosting a workshop on Wednesday evening. And again, that's at the long hotel name here. There's two Westons in the Houston Galleria area, I believe, and this one is the Weston Oaks Houston at the Galleria Hotel. It's a mouthful. So go with the one that's the longest named Weston in Houston, and we'll be there on Wednesday and Thursday. If you'd like, feel free to give Edie a call. That's at 1-800-611-BEST. And that will, 855-611-BEST. You can give her a call. She's our scheduler on that, and she does a great job getting all that stuff together. So looking forward to getting over to Houston next week, packing my bags this weekend. So, looking at the markets, particularly today, I was thinking back, on a influential investor, Benjamin Graham, who a lot of you out there likely, know the name, author of The Intelligent Investor and, also, Warren Buffett's mentor, once said, in the short run, the market is a voting machine, but in the long run, it is a weighing machine. And, I think that's kind of prophetic at the moment where, he's essentially saying in the short term, asset prices are largely influenced by popularity, sentiment. Obviously, we've seen how things have affected AI over the last handful of months, particularly in the software space where the narrative or contagion, right, is kind of certainly the market's been voting in the short term on those names. We'll see what that looks like, on the long term side. The long term, of course, is a reflection of the true value of the business. So think of it as a scale or weighing, right? The market. And that's where, you're incorporating obviously earnings, performance of the business, market fundamentals, business fundamentals. And not unlike Bill's use or our use of the 5-year price targets in our rankings on the valuation side, So that's kind of, you know, you're looking almost the momentum. Think of it as that short-term voting side. You know, a lot of that shows up in the charts. And then, of course, on the other side of the equation, we've got the weighing of the market, which is, you know, kind of the valuation side. So, of course, where I think we find ourselves today in the short term, of course, you know, all eyes and ears continue certainly to be focused on the Middle East and the U.S.'s looming conflict with Iran. Of course, over the last few days, the markets voted with higher oil prices, and gold has, you know, got a bid back after the metals, you know, took a bit of a breather last week. We now have oil, like I said, sitting right at $66 with a 52-week range between 55 and 78. So, you know, certainly at the higher point of that range, and you know, when we got to the 78, just so happens, by the way, that was in this past summer when we were in conflict with Iran again. So, if we were, you know, if we spiked at $78 during that, you know, somewhat short term, you know, conflict, if this gets into a larger situation, particularly where you've got a blocking of the strait for a period of time, then you're going to see probably a much larger potential in the 88. You know, I've seen numbers in the mid 80s or above oil for a period of time, and obviously the longer the conflict would be, the longer that higher that number is likely going to get to for a period of time. So in terms of the buildup, as we mentioned yesterday, of course the buildup keeps growing. We've got unmatched air power in the region, whether it's F-16s, F-22s, F-35s, obviously all the supporting aircraft, refuelers, those types of things. We've got, you know, two, I think at this point we've got the second, so we've got two aircraft carrier groups in the region. And, you know, it looks, you know, over time, depends on if, you know, how this is going to play out. I believe President Trump mentioned, you know, kind of a week to 15-day kind of time frame yesterday. So we'll see where that lies. I think the last time he gave a time frame, it was maybe 10 days, and I think we might have, you know, began our attacking after 3 days. So we'll see, of course, be watching over the weekend. I think, you know, I don't expect to see any huge moves, in the market today, just because, you know, you've got that potential uncertainty over the weekend. We're not seeing any panic selling at the moment with all the, equity markets in the green at the moment. So, be interesting. Like I said, we'll keep an eye on it. And you know, we're hoping and praying for the best there. And, we'll see how it plays out. But, of course, you know, before we get too far into the future, you know, we've got a, you know, we'll recap, yesterday's equity markets. When we come back from the break, that's going to be, kind of that short-term voting machine, I guess we'll look at. And then, one note, after the dire Iran news, one kind of, somewhat, interesting fact, I believe, Trump, ordered the government to begin to prepare release of UFO and alien files yesterday. So that was another piece of news. And I saw some of the, space stocks, stories kind of start coming to the surface, but, apparently, going to begin the process of identifying and releasing government files related to alien and extraterrestrial life, unidentified aerial phenomenon, and unidentified flying objects. Trump did say that he, had not seen evidence that that aliens exist. He said, I don't know if they're real or not. So that'll be, you know, some of these, next files that we'll get out in terms of some of the releases. I know we had, obviously some of the Epstein, most of the Epstein stuff, if not, all of it, maybe at some point. We had, some Martin Luther King, information come out, obviously some JFK information come out. So who knows what's around the corner? Maybe we'll get some, you know, Bigfoot release. I don't know, but, at least, we're getting, have some stories with a little bit of fun built in them there. But yeah, with from a market standpoint, obviously, yesterday we had you had the markets all three ended in the negative. We had the NASDAQ down 0.3% yesterday. The S&P was down 0.2%. And the blue chip names in the Dow Jones were down 0.5%. So, little cooling yesterday. Some of that, I believe, was driven by some of the economic data, some of the Fed speak that we'll get into here in a little bit in terms of what's moving the markets, moved the markets yesterday and moving the markets today. So we're just getting started on today's Best Stocks Now show. And we'll be right back. Welcome back here to the Friday, February 20th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, taking the wheel for Bill today while he's doing a little traveling this morning out to Arizona. He'll be on the he's probably logged in right now, but he'll be as soon as he lands, he'll be getting some messages out to the folks. But of course, like I said, yesterday we had all of the markets were down across the board yesterday in the U.S. Today, and we're looking at the opposite effect. We've got the Dow up 128 points to 59,523. We've got the S&P 500 almost pushing 6,900, up 0.43% today. And we've got the NASDAQ just under 23,000 at the moment, up 135 points, leading the way. Up 0.6 points out there today, and oil still pretty much flat at the moment. So haven't seen a bunch of Iran news this morning, short of that time frame that the president laid out. I believe it was yesterday evening. He stays up pretty late, so it's hard for me to tell sometimes if it was in the evening or in the morning or what. But haven't seen much move in oil prices. Most of that move was, you know, as earlier this week where we had, you know, kind of a 5% spike so far in the oil markets. But in terms of in terms of this week, we also received a ton of economic data points, had some Fed speakers as well. It was a bit of a mixed bag, really, creating, haven't seen really no real significant moves in interest rates this week, even with the tensions rising with Iran. But although it, kind of worth noting, though, the 30-year mortgage actually right now sits at the lowest seen in over 3 years. So that's good for some of those, particularly first-time home buyers. We've got mortgage rates actually at their lowest level since September 2022. You've got the 30-year fixed rate right now just a basis point over at 6.01%. It's down from, I guess it was 6.09% last week. And more importantly, it's from 6.85% in a year ago. So, it looks like almost a 85 basis point move downward in the 30-year. Fixed rate on the 15-year side, we're sitting at 5.35%. A year ago, that number was 6.04%. So, this time, it's pretty interesting. I guess this time you can get a 30-year rate lower than you could get a 15-year rate this time last year. So, that lower environment's going to, of course, makes, housing affordability more important. It's also, bumped up, refi applications. So for all our, for all our loan officers, mortgage folks out there, it's been a rough go for a period of time. So, at least, refis and, hopefully, things will pick back up for you. As you know, that's a very, cyclical business out there. But You know, that's obviously on the long term, you know, long end of the curve there from a short term rate perspective. Of course, you know, as we've talked about, the market isn't pricing in a rate cut until really the June 17th decision meeting. Right now, there's a 6% chance of a cut in March, so that's pretty much not happening. And we've got a 20% chance of a cut in April and a 59% chance of a cut in June. So June is the first time where you get, you know, more of a, obviously, more of a 50% chance of a cut in June. So we'll see. At least we know that where that stands today on February 20th, but we'll see where that number we'll see how that number fluctuates. So I'm going to start looking at that June 17th decision figure and see how that fluctuates over time, depending on what information comes in. And no coincidence, I guess, it just so happens that that June 17th meeting will be is going to be the first meeting without Jerome Powell as chairman. We don't know if he'll still be on the board, but he'll certainly not going to be the chairman at that point. And I guess Kevin Warsh will likely be at the helm for that one. I assume he would get confirmed prior to that particular meeting. So continue to follow that. So put that one, put June 17th on your calendar there. And of course, yesterday, one of the news-making headlines was we actually heard from one of Trump's recent Federal Reserve appointees, indicating that he was a bit less dovish than the last Fed meeting. So, Fed Governor Steven Mnuchin, who's been, you know, the most dovish, or you know, dovish meaning the one who, you know, the one who wanted the most interest rate cuts, right? Versus the hawk, which is the would be on the other end of the spectrum, wanting to raise rates or not wanting to lower them, at least. And so he, you know, he had some interesting things to say in terms of, you know, essentially he's leaning less aggressive into these cuts than he did, you know, 2 months ago, whenever he had to put the dot plot down. And what he's saying is, you know, from a data standpoint, right, the you know, some the data is just, you know, kind of leaning him a little bit more to not as much of a cut. He was shooting, he was thinking that interest rates should be around 2% right now in his mind. If he had to put a dot down today, he's basically saying that it would be a little more than that 2%. But he's, you know, continually been the one, I believe in the last four meetings, he's wanted a larger cut than the decision. So he's really, I think, gone against the Fed, at least wanting more cuts the last four decision meetings. So little change there, just trying to get some of the psyche of what reading the tea leaves of what the Fed's thinking. You know, some of those comments are obviously what dovetails into those percentages I gave you in terms of what the chances of a rate cut are at the next three meetings. So, you know, all of these, as Bill says, all these different cross currents, whether it's economic data points, whether it's what's going on, you know, geopolitical risks in Iran, whether it's, you know, corporate earnings or, you know, stories of disruption in the AI space. All of those things are kind of, you know, get mashed together and in weighed and voted on daily in the markets. So those comments, like I said, those comments were didn't really move it from an interest rate standpoint, but did kind of put a little of an overhang on the trading yesterday. Well, when obviously we get data on a daily basis, and we had some right before the show started today, we had some U.S. GDP numbers, which are kind of you know, affecting the market a bit today, and we also got the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, PCE. So we'll hit a couple of those on the back half of the show today, getting a couple of those readings. And then also we've got to touch on this Blue Owl story. It's in the private credit space, and as you know, Bill's been warning on the private credit space. So we'll get into that Blue Owl story and what they were doing there. It's one of the big stories, that in the GDP and PCE numbers that are driving the market today. But we'll be right back for the second half of the Best Stocks Now show. Stay with us.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back to the second half of the Friday, February 20th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, serving as relief captain for Bill this morning as he makes his way out to Arizona. I'm going to be visiting with some individual investor group out there in Scottsdale. They got a good bit of membership, so. And it's going to be without them, and we'll be there in Houston next Wednesday. That's Wednesday the 25th and Thursday the 26th. We will be at the Weston Oaks Houston at the Galleria. So the longest named Galleria in Houston, that's where we'll be. We'll be there. Bill will also be doing a workshop on Wednesday evening, so looking forward to get a chance to see everybody. You can always reach Edie at 855-611-BEST. That's 855-611-2378. Give her a ring, and she'll try to get you on there, work you in, do what she can from a scheduling standpoint. And, of course, as always, to stay up to date with our thoughts on the market, get Bill's newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. And sign up for the trial there, and you'll get Bill's live trading. You'll get the full newsletter, and get an idea of what he's thinking, kind of on a daily and weekly basis. So, market wise, still looking at pretty much green everywhere here, except for crude oil. So hopefully all is safe in the Middle East at the moment. One thing I wanted to touch on base here real quick, and kind of a big story that Bloomberg, I think Bloomberg actually kind of broke it, or was from a Bloomberg piece this morning, is really the story, this new Blue Owl story out today. They were in the news not long ago as well for some essentially liquidity issues within some of their private credit products. And as you've heard Bill and us warn over and over of a potential, 2008, 2009 style, train wreck potentially, right, in the private credit space at some point. Certainly not with the contagion that the Great Recession had, but of course, in first, to be fair to the private credit space, private credit is the vast market. There's, there's a lot of things. If you, in the credit space, if you can't throw it into, something, some bucket, you throw it in, nowadays it seems like you throw it into the private credit bucket. But, there are some ends of it that are less aggressive than others. On one end, you have kind of, example of on the, less aggressive end, you've got, debt issued on leased equipment. Of course, the key there is the underlying collateral, the underlying, underlying, equipment, making sure it's maintained, that type of thing, right? And obviously you got to get paid for paid for it. But a lot of times if they're not paying for it, you can go back and clause us to go ahead and take the equipment, and worse, you have the equipment and you can either sell it or lease it out again. So you've got, some less credit risk there, if you will. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got, these certain private credit, facilities kind of lending to borrowers that, really cannot get traditional financing, whether it's a business or for whatever purpose, right? They can't go to a traditional bank or go to traditional lines of financing and get a loan. So they have, they've got these private credit facilities. Obviously, higher risk borrowers, those folks are, going to be required to pay higher rates of interest, higher cost of capital, which equates into higher yields for for investors, right? So the attraction there for investors or institutional investors is really yield, right? And so how, you know, that's, you know, regardless, no matter what side you're on private credit, a lot of times though, the biggest issue is liquidity or lack thereof, illiquidity, that is. And so, illiquidity is an issue across the sector, and this kind of gets into the crux of the whole Blue Owl issue within one of their offerings. So the stock symbol today was down a bit more. It's recovered a bit, down 1.63%. That symbol on Blue Owl is OWL, O-W-L. And, you know, essentially what has occurred, Blue Owl, you know, went out to the market and they've had a liquidity crunch in their Blue Owl Capital Corp. II product. So if you're in, you know, if you happen to be in that Blue Owl Capital Corp. II, you're likely already familiar with these liquidity issues. But what they've done is they went out and sold $1.4 billion worth of loans to essentially insurers. They sold it to a pension fund. They sold it to CalPERS or actually California Pension Employees Retirement System. So I don't think it's CalPERS. I think that's actually, I guess that is CalPERS. Yep, that is CalPERS. So it sold it to CalPERS, Antonio. They also sold it to Ontario Municipal Employees Retirement System. And then they sold it to British Columbia Investment Management Corp. And they also sold it to one of their own funds. So essentially four buyers. They say they sold this debt at 99.7% of par value, so doesn't appear to have taken a hit. I don't know how much they, you know, cost them to originate those loans, so they probably are still taking a haircut on it in some form or fashion. But the idea here is they've sold this stuff to institutions, which frankly those are the people that should be buying, in my opinion, these types of assets because of the illiquidity. They're much more longer term investors. They're also more sophisticated investors. And so they're using this capital, right? The goal is to use this capital to pay redemptions, for investors who want to be out of the fund. So, the good news is I think it's actually, you know, a positive. I thought it's a positive for smaller investors here because it is going to, you know, provide some liquidity for them. And, like I said, frankly, the insurance companies and pension funds and other institutional investors are the best ones to be purchasing this type of debt because they are, you know, truly long-term, you know, a lot of times long-term investors and have, you know, their institutions infinitely longer than you and I, theoretically in terms of their lifetime. And so, those are the folks that are, you know, should be purchasing. And instead of our fear has always been packaging some of this stuff up to small investors. Because, you know, small investors tend to need or want liquidity, whether, you know, it's something that they, you know, want or need, something happens in their life and they need the money, or, simply if they panic and want to get out of whatever investment they are in. So, you know, investor beware. I know the yields look very attractive, but certainly not all, you know, private credit is packaged, the same way. So pay attention to liquidity and, you know, the terms of the investment. So, just a bit of a warning there, and something we've seen and have been kind of watching closely. So we'll get off the soapbox on that one for the moment. But that's one of the big stories kind of across the board. The other one today has really been on the economic front. We've got a bunch of economic reports and readings over the week. This week we actually even got a couple of backlog readings that were still put off as a result of the first, you know, the longest government shutdown in history. But we got the PCE inflation figures from the Fed today. That's the Fed's favored inflation reading. That came in 0.1% ahead, really across the board. I think every reading came in 0.1% higher than consensus. So, a little bit hotter than expected, not anything extreme. We had, I think on the monthly basis, we got a 0.4% figure, top line PCE number. Consensus was 0.3. Previous reading the month before was 0.2, so a little bit of a rise there, but like I said, only a 0.1% higher than consensus. And we had the year-over-year figures for PCE inflation was 2.9. Obviously, we know that the Fed would prefer to target 2, but I guess on the bright side, at least it's below 3. A lot better than the readings we've seen over the last handful of years. So I'll take the 2.9 at this point, you know, here. So consensus was 2.8. And then on the core side, same thing, really, monthly number 0.4, consensus was 0.3%, year-over-year figure was right at 3, versus a 2.9% consensus there. So nothing, you know, overly hot on the PCE, on the inflation side of things, and then, you know, actually kind of a surprise on the GDP side. So, okay, we got a little hot on the inflation side. On GDP, we were actually came in below consensus, so that would mean the economy may need a little boost from interest rates. So we'll finish up that discussion when we come back from for the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. We'll be right back. Back to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner analyst here at Gunderson Capital, sitting in for Bill today. And we've got a little momentum in the market here. It looks like we've got the NASDAQ now up 0.9% here, getting closer to that 22,900 mark. That's leading the way. And we've got S&P 500 just under, actually, 6,900, up over 0.5% at the moment. And the Dow kind of picking up the rear there, up 0.16%, just under 49,500. And so, yeah, I mean, in terms of market, I mean, I've got, like I said, kind of a mixed bag. You know, probably my guess is potentially may have some, you know, kind of some stimulus factors potentially coming in here. The GDP number actually came in below consensus, so actually rose only 1.4%, and it was assumed consensus was actually 2.8%, and of course the previous quarter was 4.4% in the third quarter. So pretty significant pullback from there. Primarily, I mean, it's primarily driven by the longest government shutdown in history. So let's don't forget the, you know, one of the biggest consumers out there, of course, is the U.S. government, and they are a little distracted in the fourth quarter. So that I believe kind of had a big issue on GDP. GDP overall, if you look at it from a year-over-year basis, increased 2.2% in 2025. That was against a 2.8% growth in 2024. One interesting line was personal consumption actually decreased. It came in at 2.4%. Previously, it was 3.4% the quarter prior. So something to keep an eye on there. But the you know, overall, actually, I saw some numbers that were actually pretty positive from the standpoint of, you know, a lot of this growth for GDP this quarter was really strictly driven by private sector growth. So, if you took out government contraction, you would actually have had a 5% GDP number, which is pretty significant. So, so that's kind of wanted to get that in because that's what's sitting on the other side of the. PCE number. So we had a bit of a hot inflation number, not too hot, but a bit. And then, of course, we had a little slowdown in GDP. Likely, my guess is this bump will be something that's not sustainable bump, but like I said, driven really by that longest government shutdown in history. Now you know we can't get rid of a show late, get done with the show nowadays without talking about an AI disruption story. So as Bill's been calling it, the virus appears to have kind of spread to Booking.com and Expedia in the travel business. So apparently disruptions everywhere. It doesn't matter who you are, but you've had booking and I'll pull them up in here in just a second, but them and Expedia fell pretty significantly on Thursday. What happened was, I guess, Wyndham is going to strike a partnership with Google, Anthropic, and I believe ChatGPT, and essentially, would could potentially make their own, AI agents or what have you, within the hotel, which would kind of, could kind of freeze out names like and business types like Booking and Expedia. So. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, but that just kind of goes to show you that there's, disruptions everywhere. You can't get away from it. So that was one story that caught my eye, and certainly that narrative of, we never know who's going to catch a cold next, and apparently it's in the hotel booking space. So. And Booking, let's see, Booking.com, they're down, I think, over. Let's see, they were down over 7.7% yesterday. They're up 0.3%, so a tiny bit of a bump, but, they're sitting at 4,000 right now. They were up in 52-week range on them was 58.39. So you're looking at, it's been about that's a pretty significant, that's a 31% drop in the name, in a relatively short period of time. So, I don't think that's necessarily one you want to catch the falling knife on yet, but one worth looking at just in terms of one that's been disrupted and a great example of, what we've seen in the software space. I mean, the stock was at $5,000 at the beginning of the month. On February 2nd, it was trading at $51.22. Like I said, it's shed $1,100 on the stock two, three trading weeks. So that's it's one of these things. And in this AI world, you never know what's going to disrupt something, so you got to keep an eye. It's a 20% drop in the month of February. So keep an eye. That's why we got to stay vigilant. That's why we got to keep an eye on things. And that's that's certainly what we do, and what Bill does here at the firm. Obviously, our thought process of being, active versus passive investing. I guess kind of that booking example is one that's right on the forefront of what's going on out there, where you want to pay attention to this stuff, keep an eye on it, and not let those names really get away from you. If you want to stay up to date with our thoughts on the markets, get Bill's newsletter at GundersonCapital.com, or if you'd like to have a discussion with us about your portfolio allocation, give us a call. It's 855-611-BEST. That is 855-611-2378. And you can sign up for Bill's newsletter, live trading, so you'll get his thoughts, alerts throughout the trading day. Via email. Also, you'll get the full version of Bill's newsletter on the weekends, which is really just a collection of his and our research over the week. Kind of a hodgepodge of a bunch of different charts, valuation that he's doing behind the scenes, popular news stories, things we talk about throughout the week of the show, but good insights there. So feel free to go to GundersonCapital.com and get a hold of that. But we're looking forward to getting out to Houston. Bill's already on his way, I think he's already there in Arizona. So I'm looking forward to getting out there next week. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and thanks for listening. It's the Best Stocks Now show. Stay well.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.